So we are holding on Bays Omud Bays, about a quarter of the way down the Omud line against Ama. Okay, we're in the middle of talking about, the Gemara describes how La'asid Lover, there's going to be the judgment of all the nations in front of Hashem. They all come first in a mixture, and Hashem says, each nation come by yourself. So the Romans step up first, because they're the most important. Okay. Amar lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem says to them, B'mai asaktem, what have you been occupying yourselves with? What have you accomplished in the world? Amrim lefanav, so they answer him, B'nei shalom, havish shivakim tikninu, we made many marketplaces, having mechatzoy sasinu, we built many bathhouses. The Romans were famous for those kinds of things. Have kesef zohar hirbinu, we made, there's a lot of gold and silver. We improved the economy. B'cholam loyasinu ela b'shvo Yisrael. We all did this for the sake of the Jewish people. Today she is asked about Torah in order that they should be able to be. Hold on, and relax. Avraham Moshe, relax. Kadeshi is asked about Torah in order that the Jewish people should be able to occupy themselves with learning Torah. So Hashem answers to them, Shaitim Shaba Ulam, you fool, you world-class fool. Now, the obvious question, why they're fools, why Hashem isn't calling them liars, let's finish off with what Hashem says, and then we'll talk about it. Wait. The Shaitim Shaba Ulam, Kol Masha Afisim, everything that you accomplished, Latzarech Atmechem Afisim, you did it for your own purposes. You didn't do it for the sake of the Jewish people. You did it for your own, for the reasons that you yourselves wanted. For example, Tikantem Shvakim Lahosha Behem Zonis. Why did you set up marketplaces? Not just that there should be business taking place over there. In fact, even if it was just for that, that would be enough for Hashem to mention. The point is you're doing it for your own selfish purposes. But on top of that, you made it for the purpose of there being Zonis there, for the purpose of immorality. And by the way, Tosfos points out later on in the Perek that actually the importance of this is it's not just that they were into immorality, it's also they used that as another thing that they could tax. Later on in the Sefer we have a story over there which Tosfos explains over there. Yeah. So like this. Yeah. So you made it that this way you can. Yeah. And on top of that you can tax it. Yeah. you have the famous expression. You have the famous expression. I think it's from Reagan. Some people have the view. How does it go? If it moves, tax it. If it continues moving, regulate it. And if it stops moving, subsidize it. So yeah, as long as it moves, as long as there's Zionists around, then then they can use it for taxation. Okay. Anyway, mechasoyis la'adim v'hanatmachem, you made bathhouses in order to enjoy yourselves, not just that people can get clean, pashut, but also to enjoy yourselves. In those days, bathhouses were like a huge social thing. As far as kesef zahav, the gold and silver that you're saying that you improved the economy, shalihu, the gold and silver belongs to me. Shenema, as the pasuk says, liya kesef v'liya zahav, nu'um Hashem tzvakos, mine is the silver, mine is the gold, says Hashem. The Ravid points out a nuance on this that Hashem is saying, look, It's not like a person really accomplishes and gains a lot of gold and silver through their own efforts. Ultimately, it comes only from the bracha of Hashem. Fine, a person has to make a keli. Yeah. You guys ignored that. You guys made it as though the whole thing of gold and silver depends on your own abilities and your own talents and whatever, ignoring Hashem. So therefore, adrabba, not only you can't use that as an argument in your favor, it's an argument against you that you thought that you can do it independently of me. Is there, after all, among you anybody who says this? Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, the Pasuk that we started quoting yesterday, which brought us into this whole Agadta, we started saying, Kol HaGoyim Nikbetzu Yachdav, all the nations assemble, gathered together, and the individual nations assemble one by one, as we said. And the next part of the Pasuk is, Mibahem Yagid Zois. Who is there among them who can say Zois? And what is Zeus? Ain Zeus ala Torah. The word Zeus refers to the Torah. Shenema v'Zeus haTorah, Asher Sam Moshe. So in other words, Hashem is saying, after all, did you occupy yourselves with Torah? Were you at least involved in any way with Torah? We'll see later. They have at least the Shevet Mitzvot Menoyach to learn. But besides that also, I'll tell you one second. Miyad Yotzei v'Pachei Nefesh, so they leave disappointed. That's it. They're not going to get the reward that they were looking forward to. Again, we talked about yesterday what the idea that Maharsha says, that when they see the scroll, the book, whatever, in Hashem's lap, Tavyachol, they think it means the books of their laws, the books of their philosophies and whatever. So, but Hashem explains to them, no, this is the Torah, and you guys had nothing to do with it. So now, the obvious question that a lot of people ask is, when Hashem... First of all, how do they think they're going to get away with such an argument before Hashem? And why does Hashem respond by calling them fools? So there is so the Chida talks about just anybody who tries to lie to Hashem is obviously a fool, because it's one thing to lie to a human being who might not know the difference. Hashem knows the truth. How do you even think to lie to him? Obviously, you must be foolish to think you can. Right.
But anybody who doesn't have to.
No, but even so. But
a certain amount of foolishness.
Right, no, okay, fine. There is a fascinating explanation that's brought for that's brought from a couple of people I've seen that it's brought in the name of Rav Tzadok of Lublin. It's famously brought in the name of Rav Velvel Brisker, in the name of his father, Rav Chaim Brisker. That they're arguing that all of the things we accomplished do help, that the Jewish people ultimately are able to use them for Torah and mitzvahs purposes. And Hashem argues to them, that's fine, but you're shoitim, you're fools, that you didn't, the Romans, and we'll see the other nations also, whatever they accomplished. The fact is, the marketplaces that they built are usable. You do use them. The commerce that takes place in them does, one second. Besides the fact that Jews directly use them, besides the fact, of course, you have Jews, even indirectly, the Gemara tells us in Yevamos, HaKol B'Shvil Yisrael, everything in the world that happens ultimately is for the benefit of the Jewish people. The Gemara says over there that even a ship that travels from France to Spain, which in those times were on the edge of the world, is only successful for the sake of the Jewish people. So they're arguing, ultimately, what we accomplish, the fact that we advance civilization, helps the Jewish people. And Hashem, and one second, and Hashem answers them, Shoitim Sheba Olam, yes, but why didn't you realize that at the time that you were doing it, at the time you were building these marketplaces and bathhouses and whatnot, why didn't you have that in mind? Then, fine, you could be that is helping to advance Hashem's purposes and the purposes of the Jewish people in the world. Fine, then you could be like a Zvulun to a Yisachar. But like this, you don't deserve any reward for it. He mentioned, I should, just before you get to a question, one second, he mentions in that connection, by the way, an idea that Rambam writes, for example. So the question you have to ask is, and many people ask the question, I mean, you have, if we say HaKol B'Shvil Yisrael, then how is it there's so few Jews relative to all the other nations? You don't make 99% of something in order to, you know, for the sake of the 1%. It's not really a very efficient way to build things. And then for that matter, even in a Yid's life, very little of it is actual things of Kedusha. A lot more of it is in Yonah El Mazah. You're right, that is. But
even with a few Yidin as it rise in the entire world, we still have, I think, 80% of Nobel Prizes.
That may be, but Hashem didn't put us in the world for Nobel Prizes. But the point is, the point is that Rambam says, for example, that you can have, let's say, you can have a person who, you can have a king or a rich person or whatever who built a whole palace and put tremendous effort into it. And what's the purpose? Why did Hashem make all that happen? So that one day, years from now, a tzaddik will pass by and need some shade and sit in the shade of it and then be able to enjoy the shade. And therefore Hashem made the whole thing come about. So here the Romans are making essentially the same argument, and Hashem is saying, you're shoitim, you're fooled, that everything that we accomplished in the world is ultimately for the sake of the Jewish people. And Hashem says to them, yes, but you're shoitim for not realizing, you're fools for not realizing that at the time and having that in mind. That's why, because they're saying, because they're fools, because their argument is correct, but they should have realized it at the time. They were foolish to not realize it at the time. I will mention, we have to go further in the Gemara. Okay, this argument is lost in love. This discussion here in the Gemara is what's going to happen in future times before Mashiach comes. But anyway, I just want to mention one interesting thing in that connection that Rav Velvel mentions in this connection. He gives us an example of it, the Trans-Siberian Railway. You can look it up on Wikipedia. It's the biggest, it's the longest railway line in the world. It stretches like 6,000 miles across most of Russia. Why did they build it? Whatever, they had their reasons. What was the purpose? Why Hashem made it exist in the world? Because Bnei Yeshiva, the students of Tevchat Minim and the students of Mir and whatever, used it to escape during World War II, used it to get to Japan. So that's an example of this kind of thing.
By the way, my question was, did we have to wait for the Romans to establish marketplaces?
No, but they made it.
They had greater marketplaces than they had.
That's fine, but they had a tremendous number of markets. In fact, there's a Gemara in Megillah that tells about the huge number of marketplaces they had in Rome forever. In Rome and in general, in the Roman Empire, it was one of the big things. They were big on marketplaces,
Rome,
forums,
was never
whatever.
A great marketplace before they conquered all these other nations.
Okay, but still, it is a lot of the marketplaces and a lot of the things like that. Yeah. Okay. Again, we said yesterday also their coinage circulated throughout the whole world. So yeah.
Then again.
Okay.
After all the
conquest. Yeah. Okay. All right. So Yotzes Malchus Reinu v'Nichnas Malchus Paras Acharei. So the Roman Empire leaves and the Persian Empire comes in afterwards. my time of why the Persians next. Dachashiva Basra, because they're the next most important. Umanolan, where do we know they're the next most important? Dichtiv, because you have a pasuk in Daniel. Again, in Daniel, when it describes the four beasts, the four animals representing the four kingdoms, it says Va'aru Cheva Ochri, then I saw another animal, Tinyana, a second one, Domyula Dave, that looked like a bear. Who is the bear? V'tani Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef teaches in Ebraica, Eva Parsium, this refers to the Persians. Sha'ochlin v'shoysin kadov, they eat and drink like bears. They're gluttons, in other words. Sabolin Basa Kadov, they're fat like bears. Omagavlin Seir Kadov, they grow their hair long like bears, Ein Lahem Menucha Kadov, and they're restless like bears. So we see that they're also among the four nations over there, and in fact Tosfos points out they're actually next in the Pasuk over there, they're next after Babel. But the difference is Babel at one time was a world power, but then it declined. Our Gemara is going to say later, Persia and Rome in some form or other are going to exist until Mashiach comes as world empires. Like we talked about yesterday, it can mean the Christians versus the Muslims, can mean, yeah, whatever. Anyway, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're the Jewish people. I mean,
but
you mean that we live in Western civilization. We live in the United States, which is in many ways is an heir of Rome. Yeah, but most Jews nowadays live either in Eretz Yisrael or in Eretz Yisrael or America. And America at least is more a cultural continuator, is one of the cultural continuators of Rome in its religion and its civil architecture and its form of government and a lot of other things. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Maya Saktim. So Hashem asks the Persians, what did you occupy yourselves with? Omrim Lefanav, so they tell him, Ribono Shel Olam, Havig Shorim Gasharnu, we built many bridges, Havig Krakim Kavashnu, we conquered many cities, Havig Mohammed Sassinu, we fought many wars. And again, V'cholam Layasinu, Al B'Shvo Yisrael, we only did it all for the sake of the Jewish people, Kadesh Yisasku B'Torah, so they should be able to study Torah. Again, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but Hashem says to him, hold on. We're talking in general. We're talking in general throughout all the generations. In fact, Tosfos points out later on in a few lines, the Gemara is going to point out the Persians figure they have the advantage over the Romans because they gave instructions to build the Beis Hamikdash, whereas the Romans destroyed it. However, Hashem is not asking what you did at one point in history. It's so to speak, like, what have you done for me lately? What have you been accomplishing throughout history? So anyway, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So again, Hashem says to them, Kol Ma'asheh Asitim L'Tzorech Atzmachem Asitim. No, everything you did was for your own sake. Tikanta Gshorim, you set up bridges. Lito Mehem Meches, in order that you can collect taxes, so you can collect tolls on the bridges. Krakim, you conquered a lot of cities. Lachas Mehen Angaria, so you can have them work for you.
Angaria
is government service. So this way, like you have a pool of laborers to be able to do government work. And as far as Milchamos, what about the wars that you're priding yourselves on? I'm the one who accomplished those. Shenema Hashem Ish Milchama. Hashem is the master of war. Again, Klum Yesh V'cham Magid Zois. Is there anybody among you who said Zois, who's involved with Zois, meaning the Torah? Shenema Mi V'cham Yagid Zois. Vein Zois Ava Torah. Shenema V'Zois HaTorah Ashas HaMoshe. That's it. Miyad Yotel Afon of Apache Nefesh. So they also leave disappointed. By the way, there's an interesting idea that some of the Mechorishim say that Zois specifically over here refers to Torah Shabbat Peh. Torah Shebichsav, some of the nations have. We know the Christians took over the Torah Shebichsav. The Muslims don't have it exactly, but they have certain stories and whatnot from it.
The Torah Shebichsav is specific to the Jewish people.
Well, there is that, right. But there is that, right. The Torah Shebichsav is specific to the Jewish people, right. So Hashem says, like, none of you were even bothered to involve, even bothered to check it out. So they leave disappointed, yeah.
Because I was discussing this topic today with someone.
Okay.
There
were no Geirim from those nations. Right. Okay, so Geirim become the Jewish people. They don't belong to their nations anymore.
Well, still, there were no people who were Persian but kept in Israel?
Apparently not, or at least not enough to make a difference. There is, now that you mention it, there is a famous verse that the Geir Tzedek of Vilna, Avraham ben Avraham, said later on, the Gemara is going to tell us in a little bit, that Hashem offered the Torah to all the nations and they turned it down. He says it's impossible that every person of all those nations turned it down. There must have been individuals who wanted to accept it, but they were outvoted by their nation. Those are the people whose neshamas become geirim in every generation. Okay.
Anyway, what is that?
It's a famous thing from Avraham ben Avraham, the Geir Tzedek of Vilna in the times of the Vilna Garden. Okay. Anyway. Okay, so the question is, if the Persians saw that the Romans didn't get anywhere with their argument, my time Isla, why do they even bother coming in with the same argument? The answer is Amri, because the Persians say to themselves, yes, but we have the advantage. Inu Satsri Vesimikdash, the Romans destroyed the Vesimikdash, Vanan Vanina, and we, under Kurdish, gave the and later on Dayovish, authorized it to be rebuilt. Hodis is not from Persia. Hodis was an Adoimi who became a ger or a semi ger or whatever, yeah. So they figure we have an advantage. Okay. And so it goes with every nation.
So what did Hashem answer to
that? Hashem said, fine, but again, Hashem is asking, what did you do throughout all the generations, collectively, not just one time in history you did a good thing.
Right.
Fine, for that you get a reward.
On that specific point, no. All
they're saying is, they figure that therefore they have a leg up on the Romans. Therefore, Hashem is more likely to accept their argument that they did it b'shvil Yisrael. But Hashem doesn't accept that argument. The fact is, they didn't do most of what they accomplished b'shvil Yisrael. They did it for their own purposes.
Surprisingly, Hashem did not ask them back, listen, you enslaved the Jews. You took them, after you destroyed the Beis Hamikdash, you took them to Galus. Well, how can you come and say that you helped them learn Torah?
Granted, but so they can say, okay, fine, we agree that the people who did that deserve punishment, but we as a nation collectively throughout all the generations, okay, that's the Gemara is going to say that the other nations are going to figure to themselves we have a leg up on them because
why
we didn't oppress the Jewish people.
Why didn't I talk about specifically Roman Persian?
Good, the Gemara is going to ask that in a minute. Very good. And so it goes with every other nation. They try, and Hashem tells them each one what you accomplished was for your own purposes. You were not involved with Zeus, and therefore you don't deserve a reward.
Right.
Okay. So the question is, okay, if they see already the Persians and the Romans didn't get anywhere with this kind of argument, my time highly, why do they even bother going in? All of them know they weren't occupied with Zeus, with the Torah, so what are they trying? The answer is Sabri, because they figure to themselves, Hanach ishtabdu will be Israel. Fine, the Romans and the Persians did persecute the Jewish people and enslave them and whatever. But why should Badnu be Israel? We haven't, or at least not as much. And at least not as much. And Tosfos says, by the way, I mean, the Gemara is not asking why it doesn't list. That's the next thing. Why are we only mentioning the Romans and the Persians, your question? Why are we not mentioning the other nations? Now, Tosfos says, the question isn't why we're not mentioning every single one of the 70 nations. Obviously, the Gemara is not going to go through that whole rigmarole. The question is, in particular, why don't we mention Babel and Yavon? The Babylonians
large
and the
empires.
Greeks, who were at one time large empires. They're also among the four empires in Babel.
Right.
The answer is, because the Romans and the Persians, in some form or other, their empires or their religions or whatever are going to last until Mashiach comes. Whereas Babel eventually declined and just became a local power. Iraq is not a world power. Neither is Greece. And so we don't list as opposed to Babel and as opposed to the Romans and the Persians, where they in some form or other they still exist. We're not just talking about the fact that there's a country of Italy and a country of Iran. We're talking about that the ideologies that they represented still have a huge influence in the world. Roman law, the Roman language or whatever. Yeah. You know,
Roman
and
language,
well, the Latin language, yeah. I mean, you still have many countries
Latin
in the world still use Latin derived languages.
Greek.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, and the same thing with Persia and Islam. Yeah. By the way, I mean, it's true, of course. It's true, of course, that the Babylonians and the Greeks also caused trouble for the Jewish people at various times. However, Binyan Shlomo, Sefer from Reb Nosson Maz, a relative of ours. He was a cousin of one of my ancestors. He was now based in Frankfurt in the 1700s. Anyway, he wrote a sefer called Binyan Shlomo on Reb Nosson Maz. Reb Nosson Maz, yeah, he was out based in the Rosh Hashiva of Frankfurt in the late 1700s. Anyway,
we're related to the Lord Sefer?
Yes, we are. So he writes in his Sefer Binyan Shlomo, yes, but that was a short-term thing. Eventually, afterwards, you know, the Babylonians were more friendly to the Jewish people. The Greeks eventually allied themselves with the Jewish people and helped them out and whatever. So, okay, there was a period of persecution, but it's not like an ongoing thing like it was with the Romans and the What about the Germans? I was not mentioning the Germans, but it's okay. So, yeah. All right.
The Germans had a whole.
They're right. Okay. All right. Anyway, Omrim Lefanov. So now
they should cover ahead of the of the Romans in terms of being judged at the end of the day.
Maybe, I don't know. Okay. I'm in the farm. So now the goyim say to Hashem, fine, Ribbono Shel Olam, klum nasata lanu v'lo kibanu. Okay, fine. You're saying we didn't occupy ourselves with Torah. So did you offer it to us and we didn't accept it? If you had given us a chance to accept it, we could have accepted it also. So the obvious question, we must have a name, how could you possibly say that? We know, of course, Hashem did offer them the Torah. Well, see, if you have a pasuk that says, Vayomar, Joshua Moshe Rabbeinu says, in Vezoyis HaBracha, Hashem mi Sinai ba, Hashem came from Sinai, Vezorach mi Seir Loma, and he's shown forth to them from Seir, which is where the Bnei Edom live. Uchtiv, and you have another pasuk in the Chavakuk, Elikami Taimon Yavav Gomer, Hashem comes from Taimon, which is the south, which is where the Yishma'elim live. So you have to ask, my boy the Seir, my boy the Paran. What is Hashem doing in Seir and in Paran? Paran is also in the pasuk in Vezoyis HaBracha over there, it mentions Paran, which is the land of the Yishma'elim. And what is Hashem doing in all these places?
Paran is near Turkey?
But no, Paran is someplace in the desert over there, like in Jordan or Saudi Arabia or whatever. But it's where those.
It's not Paramaran.
What?
Paran is different.
Paran is Paran. That has nothing to do with Paran, yeah. Okay. This teaches us that Hashem shocked around the Torah to every nation and every language, and they didn't accept it until Hashem came to the Jewish people, and they accepted it. So what do you mean? How can the Goyim argue that you didn't offer us the Torah? Hashem did, and they turned it down. Rather, what the Goyim's argument will be as follows. Did we accept it? Did we accept it and then not keep it? Meaning, in other words, if we had accepted it, then fine, you could hold us responsible that we didn't keep it. But we didn't accept the Torah in the first place. What are you holding us responsible that we didn't keep it? However, if they argue like that, then you can slug them up right away. You can right away contradict them. Nu, am I like Kibaltua? So, Taka, why didn't you accept it when Hashem offered it? So that's not going to be a good argument. Ella, no, kach oimim lefanav. Rather, their argument to Hashem is like this: Ribbono Shel Olam, klum kafisa aleinu how kigigis. Did you overturn the mountain of Har Sinai on top of us like a barrel? V'lo kibalnuah, and then we still didn't accept it. Kamoisha asita liyisrael, which you did do that. That you didn't have to be forced. No. They're arguing you forced the Jewish people. Why didn't you force
that's
us?
Enough.
Yeah. Commercial seats of Israel, as you did.
Why did the guy have to be forced?
Well, because the same way as the Jewish people had to be forced. Wait, one second. So, commercial seats of Israel, like you did to the Jewish people. As the pasuk says, it says they stood under the mountain. Literally, tachtisahar means at the bottom of the mountain, but that's an unusual way of saying it. So, v'omer of Dimi Bachama, sort of Dimi Bachama explains, melamed shekafa HaKadosh Baruch Hu how to gigis Israel. This teaches us that Hashem turned over the mountain like a barrel and suspended above the Jewish people's heads. And he says to them, if you accept the Torah, then good. And if not, then you're going to be buried over there. So the Goyim are arguing, you forced the Jewish people into accepting the Torah. Therefore, of course, they accepted it. You could have forced us, and we would have accepted it as well. Now, the question... Ask a better question. We know the Jewish people answered Nasa v'Nishma. They answered, we'll do and we'll keep the Torah. Why does Hashem have to force them? The Tosfos in Shabbos, where the Gemara is also brought, talks about a couple of possibilities. Different other Mefoshim talk about it can
That's
be.
When they were forced, they said Nasa v'Nishma.
No. This is they said Nasa v'Nishma before they were forced. They said Nasa v'Nishma on Dalad Sivan. 2 days later, or 3 days later, Vav or Zion Sivan, you have different opinions in Shabbos, the Torah was given.
So how were they forced then?
So that's the question. Ultimately, by Matan Torah, they were forced by having the mountain held over their head. But if they said Nasav and Ishmael a couple of days before, why do they need to be forced?
Right.
So Tosfos and other Mephoshim talk about in various places different possibilities. It might have been that they were willing to accept Torah Shabbat Chassav, but they're not willing to accept Torah Shabbat Peh, and Hashem had to force them into that. It might be that the forcing is just so that they don't take back what they said. Yes, we said a couple of days ago Nasav and Ishma, but now we may want to change our mind. So Hashem is holding them to what they consented to a few days before. And then there's an interesting idea, which the Maharal brings, and which is also brought in Chassidus, that what we mean is, look, how did the Jewish people come to Har Sinai in the first place to receive the Torah? Hashem showed them a tremendous outpouring of Elikus. You have the Makos, the Mitzrayim, all the thing in the desert. That they were relatives is another matter. But the point is, in other words, like there was such an outpouring of Elikus that like you couldn't say no to it. Kind of that's the argument that the nations have. In that case, you didn't put us in that situation. If you had made us a 10 makas and taking us out of it, then yeah, we might, yeah, exactly. Miyad Omer Lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So immediately Hashem says to them, okay, if that's what you want to argue, as the pasuk continues, that pasuk that we've been quoting throughout this drasha, after that part, who among you says Zois, the next part of the pasuk continues, V'rishonis Yashmiunu. So the earlier ones, let them make us hear. Harishonis Yashmiunu, let's make them hear the earlier ones, Shenema V'rishonis Yashmiunu, meaning, let's look at what happened before Matan Torah. Sheva mitzvah shekibaltim, you nations accepted on yourselves seven mitzvahs. Heichen kiyamdim, nu, where did you keep those? If you didn't keep those, they did accept. Noach accepted. The Rambam puts it that we learned in Sanhedrin about the details of it. The Rambam understands it that there were six. We learned in Sanhedrin over there. Six of the mitzvahs were given to Adam, and the seventh one, Abraham and Achai, was given to Noach. Yeah, so they voluntarily accepted it. So Hashem is saying, look, you voluntarily accepted those seven. Let's see how you fared with those. If you didn't keep those, we have no reason to think that if you would have received the rest of the Torah, that even if I had kafalim how to give you, even if I had forced you into accepting the other 606, who said not necessarily would you have done that?
606 plus 7,
you have 7 original ones. Mm-hmm. Okay, so where do we know, where do we see that the Goyim did not in fact keep their 7 mitzvahs? Like this, the Tani Rabbi Yosef, because Rabbi Yosef taught a brisa.
Another question. What? Should be asked. If a Kadosh Baruch Hu knew that they didn't keep the 7 mitzvahs then, why did he offer them Matan Torah?
Well, for one thing, in order that they shouldn't be able to make this argument, that this way, they shouldn't be able to make this argument, we would have accepted.
Back to my question, if that's the point.
No. Hashem offered them the Torah partly in order to forestall that argument. This way, they can't claim, okay, the seven mitzvahs we were careless on, but if you had offered us the 613 mitzvahs, we would have accepted them, maybe with being forced, or whatever. But like this, it helps forestall that. It also demonstrates, which we'll talk about this when we get to a fascinating story in Bechoros, Bez Hashem, in another year or so, we'll get to a fascinating story over there involving Rabbi Yeshua and the wise men of Athens. We're one of the points. Yeah. So they were the great sages of that, the great Goyish sages of that time. Anyway, whatever we said before, the Greeks are pretty much extinct. But not other people, but whatever. The point is anyway that you have one of their arguments over there. The way the Vilna Gaon explains it anyway is that Rabbi Yeshua points out to them that the idea of shopping around the Torah to all the other nations was precisely in order to demonstrate how unsuitable it is for them, that each one of them turns it down, and then it's brought to the Jewish people and they say nah for the Nishma. So that itself shows the greatness of the Jewish people. And
of course, knew the outcome,
but he still
did it.
Yeah.
To prove, first of all,
that they shouldn't have this excuse over here, and second of all, to underscore the greatness of the Jewish people that they did accept it.
They accepted with pressure, with tremendous...
That's fine, but nevertheless, the point is, Hashem is saying, if you didn't even keep those your seven mitzvahs, then you don't have an argument that you would have accepted these.
Okay. Even if he forced them.
So where do we see that the Goyim did not, in fact, keep their seven mitzvahs? The Tani Rabbi Yosef, because Rabbi Yosef taught a braisa, we learned this in Bava Kama. A pasuk says in Chavakuk, Omad vayimoded oretz, the pasuk says Hashem arose and measured the earth, ra'a vayater Goyim, he saw and vayater the nations. So with vayater, the simple meaning Rashi explains on the pasuk over there, is he made him jump around, whatever, like l'nata behen ala oretz. But the vayater, we're darshaning over here, is maloshin heter, maloshin that it's permissible. So my raw, what does it mean? What did Hashem see? Raw zayin mitzvahs shekiblu aleihem b'nei noach. Hashem saw that there's these seven mitzvahs that b'nei noach accepted on themselves, v'loi kimum, and they ended up not keeping them, kivin shloi kimum, now that they didn't keep them, after all, omad v'hitiram lahem. And Hashem was master them. Hashem permitted them to the goyim. So raw, Hashem saw what they're doing, vayater goyim, and therefore he made it mutter to them. So the question is, what do you mean? It's guri, it's gur. What do you mean? They gained that before they were also to do these things, and now they're mutter to do them. Im kein maftinu choyte nisko, then it would come out you gained by doing an avera. Like this, they didn't keep these mitzvahs, and now they're not bound by them anymore. Omar, brede Ravina, so Mar, the son of Ravina, says, no, that's not what it means. It means loymar. The point of it is that we're saying that Hashem permitted it to them. It's not for the good. It doesn't mean that now you're allowed to do Eva Menachai and you're allowed to do Abed Zara and whatever. Rather, what it comes to teach us is, even if the Goyim do keep their mitzvahs, they do not get a reward for it. So what do you mean? Well, they don't get a reward? V'loi, why should they not get a reward? V'hatanya, we learn in a b'raisa, ha'yer ha'meyer oimer, that a mayor used to say, minayin shafilo oved g'chavim v'oisik v'torah, shiruk ha'koin gadol. How do we know that even if a goy occupies himself with learning Torah, specifically Tosfos says, the dinim of their sheva mitzvahs, and we talked about in Sanhedrin, by the way, that you have Rishonim who argue that I think the Ramban is one such opinion, who argues that as much as possible, we know one of their seven mitzvahs is dinim, that they should have a civil law code, and as much as possible, he says, their civil laws should follow the Torahs, which means, therefore, they have a lot to learn. There's all the Bava Kama and Bava Matzia and Bava Basra and whatever, yeah. So how do we know that if they occupy themselves with Torah, with the parts of Torah that are appropriate to them, shiruk ha'koyin gadol, that they're on a level as great as the koyin gadol? Talmud Lomar, therefore, the pasuk says, Ashayasa oisim ha'odam v'chai v'hem. Therefore, you have a pasuk that says that you should keep the Torah, you should learn the Torah and do the Torah. That ha'odam can do them and live through them. And what does ha'odam mean? It doesn't say that the Kohenim Levim and Yisraelim, the various segments of the Jewish people, can do them and live through them. Elaha Adam, it says people in general. Halama, meaning Jews and non-Jews. Halamanta, from this you see, Shapel over to Chabam Ba'ezek Batara, Hareo Kohen Gadol. Then you see that even a guy who's included in Ha'adam, who learns
by Torah, we mean Shemitzvah.
So, and Tosfos points out, right? Since we have the famous thing that if a goy learns Torah, he's chayav mitzvah.
Right.
So we say there's a distinction between the parts that he's obligated to know, such as Shemitzvah and Nayach, and the various ramifications, or whatever, versus other things that are not appropriate to him.
In any case, they don't have the brain.
Well, that's neither here nor there, but even if they do, they don't get it yet. Anyway, the point is, we see from what Reb Meir is saying that if a goy does learn Torah, the parts that are appropriate to him, he does get schar. So what are you saying, that if they keep the Sheva Mitzvot Nenayach, they don't get a reward? No. What it means is, She'ein mekabel alayim schar kimet tzuva v'oise, it means they don't get the same kind of reward as a person who's commanded to do a mitzvah and then does it. Ela k'misha'einim tzuva v'oise. Rather, they get a lesser kind of reward, the kind of reward that Hashem gives for a person who's not commanded to do something and he does it anyway. Da'amar Rav Chanina, as we have the famous thing. No, da'amar, one second, I'll tell you. Da'amar Rav Chanina, as Rav Chanina says, famous thing. Gadol ha'metzuvah v'oise, yoyse m'she'ene mitzuvah v'oise. A person who's commanded and does and fulfills the mitzvah is greater than someone who's not commanded and does the same thing. Now, one second. Now, why should that be so? On the face of it, if you do it voluntarily, then you're doing a bigger thing. So Tosfos over here starts by mentioning an idea. Because when a person is commanded by Hashem to do something, he has a Yetzirah to opposing it. Therefore, the fact that he has to conquer that Yetzirah now and do it makes it a bigger challenge, and therefore he gets a bigger reward, as opposed to if he's just doing it voluntarily. He doesn't have such a Yetzirah against it anyway. There's other explanations. Well, there's that too. There's various other explanations, but in particular, in Chassidus, we know there's the whole idea of mitzvah meloshen tzavta v'chibur, the word mitzvah is related to the word for connection to Hashem. Therefore, when you're mitzvah, when you're commanded by Hashem, then doing that thing creates a connection between you and Hashem. When you're ain't a mitzvah, when you don't have that command, it doesn't create that same connection. It's a human act. It may be a very great human act, but a human act is still a finite act. Whereas when you do a mitzvah that's told by Hashem, then it's infinite. So
does the word tzion come from being mitzvah? Is it the same in yin?
No, not directly. Tzion is usually related to the word tzion, which means a marker or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. Anyway, the point is that yes, they do get a schar, they do get a reward, but not as great as they would have had they been keeping Sheva Mitzvot Nenayach all along, where then they would get a reward for having been commanded by Hashem and still doing it.
So
it's just according to that beer, according to Chassidus, it's really say oisim mitzvah. Your Isa, then your mitzvah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Well, yeah, but mitzvah that you commit. No, but a mitzvah means a two-way thing. It means Hashem is creating a connection with you by giving you a mitzvah. In Hayom Yom, some place it talks about that idea, and in some place in Tishvah, I think, or something, it talks about that idea that when you have a great king or a great wise man or whatever gives a commandment to somebody beneath him, then it creates a connection between them. You now have a certain relationship with him just by the fact that he gave you a commandment.
So it establishes that potential connection, and Oysa, like, you tap
right,
into
and
that.
And Oysa actually actualizes that connection.
Right,
exactly.
Right, okay.
Where do they get their greatest heart? Do they get their greatest heart from doing the Sheva Mitzvot, or helping us and encouraging us to do our 613 mitzvot? What comes first for them?
It's a good question. I mean, the fact is they have to keep their Shavim Mitzvah Nenayach. Even after all of this, we're still saying they're obligated to keep them. And if they can, as the Rambam says, if they keep them because Hashem said so, then they get, then they're considered Chassidim Masar Olam, and they have a place in Olam Haba.
Right.
On top of that, yes, they have the job of making sure that we're able to fulfill the 613. I don't know that one really comes ahead of the other, but okay.
And an additional question: why HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not include in their mitzvahs to encourage us to learn Torah or help us learn Torah?
It's a good question, but the basic answer is pretty all the Shev Mitzvahs Bnei Noach are all negatives. We learned that in Sanhedrin. They're all negative mitzvahs.
Okay.
Don't worship Avodah Zarah, don't whatever, because these are all things to avoid destroying the world, basically. They have. There are positive things they're supposed to accomplish also. For example, Rishonim talk about whether Goyim have a mitzvah to honor their parents and to give tzedakah and to do various other positive things. And yet they may have such mitzvahs, but they're not considered among the official seven, because those they can just keep because it seems sensible or whatever, whereas the Shev mitzvahs they have to keep because Hashem said so. So helping us accomplish our studying of Torah and our doing of mitzvahs is a very great thing. But it can't be considered among their official seven because their official seven are all negative mitzvahs.
Well, there's one mitzvah that's positive, which is to love the Eishter.
No, they don't have a mitzvah to love Hashem. They have a mitzvah. The only
recognize.
No. That they have a mitzvah not to worship Avodah Zarah.
And
not to curse Hashem, not to whatever.
They don't have a mitzvah
to
recognize that they were.
Practically speaking, if you're told not to worship idols and not to curse that, no, as an underlying thing for all these things, as the Rambam says, they have to be keeping these mitzvahs because Hashem said so, and because Hashem told Moshe to say that these mitzvahs are binding on them. However, that's an underlying thing. It's not official.
It's not direct.
It's not a direct thing, right? It's underlying all these mitzvahs.
They have no obligation to... towards Hashem, strictly speaking.
In that sense, I guess you could say it. By the way,
how is establishing courts a negative?
No, but it means that they can't allow there to be anarchy. I mean, there comes out of it a positive, but there has to be a justice system. But in essence, it's basically a negative thing that you can't allow crimes and things to remain unpunished. This is the famous thing that Rambam writes about, for example, the whole story with Dinah and Shechem. How is it, why is it that Shimon and Levi wiped out the city? Because the people, they allowed such a crime to happen and they didn't punish it. So therefore, they're held responsible. As an interesting side thing over here, by the way, Tosfos points out, we know the famous thing, Atem Kruyim Adam, that the Gemara says elsewhere, only you Jewish people are called Adam. Here we're saying that Ha'adam refers to Goyim as well. So Tosfos mentions the idea, among others, that maybe there's a difference between Adam and Ha-Adam. The word Adam, in general, refers to the Jewish people, although even that, there's exceptions. But Ha-Adam refers, in general, to humanity. As an interesting side, I want to mention, by the way, an interesting side thing on this, about this Atem Kruyim Adam, an interesting historical thing from a little over 100 years ago. I think we all know about the famous Bayliss trial, when Mendel Bayliss was put on trial in Russia 100 odd years ago for the claiming that he'd killed a Goyish kid to use his blood, et cetera, the usual blood libel over there. So there were Jews all over the world were involved in the trial and in the defense and whatever. We know that Eved Ashab famously was very heavily involved in it, and many other Gdolis through all of that time also were. That, on the other hand, on the Russian side, they were trying to they mined the Gemara and whatever for things that they could take out of context. And one of the things that they took is this that we're saying Atem Kruyim Adam. So they're arguing, look, your own Talmud says that that only you are considered Adam, the nations of the world are not. So therefore, obviously, you consider them subhuman, et cetera, et cetera. The official government rabbi of Moscow was named Rabbi Yaakov Mazer. He was called to the witness stand to answer that. So they tell that at that time, Rabbi Meir Shapiro was a young Rav, he was in his mid-20s, so he told Rabbi Yaakov what to answer them. And Rabbi Yaakov, in fact, said this on the witness stand over there. He said like this: we know in Hebrew there's four words for human being. There's Adam, Ish, Gever, and Enosh. All of them can be pluralized, Gever, Yav, Gvorim, Ish, Yav, Anoshim, etc. Only Adam is the same in the singular and the plural. So the mayor says, and Rabbi Yaakov repeated this in front of them, therefore the idea is, what do we mean, Atem Kruyim Adam? Look at this. You have one Yid over here, this Mendel Bayliss, who nobody ever heard of before, and the entire Jewish people are coming to his defense and helping him out. If you had one individual Frenchman or one individual Italian or American or what have you who was in trouble, okay, you'd have maybe the people from his neighborhood would be involved or whatever. Mer nisht, no more than that. So that's Atem Kruyim Adam. Only the Jewish people are like that. Collectively, all of us are one person. We saw this last month with the whole thing with Shalom Mordechai, how, yeah. Anyway, yeah. Okay, getting back to the Gemara. Okay. That's true. Okay. Ella kach omim ha'objekt ha'chavim l'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Fine. So the goyim, so that argument of the goyim can't stand. It's true they don't have a basis to say that we would have kept the Torah if you offered it to us, because we see they didn't keep their Sheva Mitzvahs either. But they argue like this. Rabbeinu Shlomo, Yisrael shekiblu ha'hechem kimua, knew the Jewish people did accept the Torah. Where is the evidence that they've been keeping it all these years? Amar lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ani mei b'hem shekimua ha'Torah kula. So Hashem says, I can testify that they kept the whole Torah. But the goyim say, Rabbeinu Shlomo, klum yesh av shemeid abnoi. How do you have such a thing according to your own Torah? Father can't testify on behalf of his son. Dichtiv b'ni b'chori Yisrael. In the Torah, the Jewish people are described as Hashem's firstborn son. So you're disqualified.
To Jewish
people. But the goyim are not disqualified.
Yeah, but well, that's we'll see later. Wait. Okay. Okay, so Hashem says, Amar lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, fine, Shamayim Ba'aretz Ye'udu Behem Shekim Wa Torah Kola. Fine, let heaven and earth testify that the Jewish people have kept the whole Torah. Omrim Lefanav, but that the goyim aren't satisfied by that. They also, they have good lawyers. Omrim Lefanav, they say to Hashem Ribbono Shel Olam, Shamayim Ba'aretz Nogin Ve'Edusim. The heaven and the earth have an interest over here in declaring that the Jewish people kept the Torah. What?
Why?
Right, because Shenema, because the Pasuk says, Im loy brisi yom v'layla. The Pasuk says, if it weren't for my covenant, which is by day and by night, meaning learning Torah, which takes place by day and by night, well, gisa bo yom v'layla, you should learn Torah day and night. Fine, but the learning Torah primarily, which takes place by day and by night. Chukos shamayim v'aretz lesamti. Hashem says, I would not have set up the laws of heaven and earth. So the whole existence of heaven and earth, originally, the whole creation of them depended on the Torah. And Amar Rav Shimon Lakish, and we also find that Rav Shimon Lakish, Rav Shlakish said, "My dichtiv by erev by voker yom hashishi." What does it mean at the end, after the 6 days of creation, all the other ones that said yom echad, yom sheni, shlishi, etc. By the sixth one, it's yom hashishi, the sixth day. Why the? Why the extra hey?
Why not?
Why should it? It should say Yom Shishi, like I said, Yom Chamishi, and the others. Melamed shehisna HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Maisi Bereshis. This teaches us that Hashem made a condition with the works of Bereshis, with what he created in the world. V'omar, and he says, Yom Yisrael mekablanus terosim mutav. If the Jewish people accept my Torah, then good. V'im lav anim achzer eskam l'toyu v'voyu. And if not, then I'll return you to toyu v'voyu, to nothingness.
How does that explain Hashishi?
The Hashishi, therefore, represents the sixth day of Sivan where the Torah was given. In other words, that by Erev, by Yavoker, but ultimately what made it all exist, Yom HaShishi, the sixth day of Sivan, when the Torah was given. Tosfos points out we have the opinion that the Torah was given on the seventh of Sivan, but okay, you could still say that it was 6 days since Moshe started giving them Hashem's instructions, or that it was supposed to be on the sixth and Moshe added an extra day. So therefore, it still works. Therefore, we see that Hashem only created the world on condition that the Jewish people accept the Torah. There's another explanation, by the way, that the hay of Yom HaShishi represents the five chumashim. That only when the Jewish people accepted the five chumashim, then. And behind you, Amar Chizkiyah, this is also what Chizkiyah says. My dichtiv, what does it mean? It says in a pasuk in Tehillim, Mishamayim Hishmat Adin, from heaven you made everyone hear your laws, meaning by Matan Torah. Eretz Yora V'Shakata, the earth was fearful, the earth was afraid, and then it was quiet. What does that mean? It was afraid and it was quiet. So what does that mean? Im yara lama shokta, im shokta lama yara. If the earth was afraid, then what do you mean it was quiet? If it was quiet, what do you mean it was afraid? Afraid usually means like it's shaking in fear or whatever.
Someone who's afraid doesn't talk.
No, but fine. Yeah, but then
someone who's quiet is exactly that.
Yeah, fine. No, because you can also have it. It would still at least be shaking or whatever. No, shakata means like it's peaceful. Shaket doesn't just mean quiet. Shaket in Tanakh terminology often means peaceful, content.
Quiet.
So what does it mean? Is it fearful or is it quiet? What it means is originally the earth was afraid that if the Jewish people don't accept the Torah, then the whole world is gonna go back to Torah Revoyer, is gonna go back to chaos. All of a sudden, shocked up, and then afterwards it was calm. Once the Jewish people accepted the Torah, then the earth knows to itself, good, okay, now our existence is secure. So therefore, that's the point. The goyim are arguing that the heavens and earth are negei b'davar. Now, Tosfos points out the obvious question that you could ask. Okay, we said that Hashem created the world, that then the condition is if the Jewish people accept the Torah, well, the heaven and earth still exist. Obviously, the Torah has been kept. Tosfos gives a couple of answers. One of them is that we only said Hashem made the condition if the Jewish people accept the Torah. Hashem didn't say that if it keeps on going on. So once they accepted it, that's it. And the existence of heaven and earth is secure. The fact that it's been existing, the fact that it's continued to exist for the last 3,700 years or whatever since Matan Torah, doesn't necessarily demonstrate that the Jewish people have been continuously keeping the Torah since then.
Still, a degree of truth, accepting the Torah can also mean, to a certain extent, accepting it generation after generation after generation.
Well, there is that, but after all, we said before, the Goyim accepted their Sheva Mitzvahs, and then they gave up on them, so, and then they reneged on them, so we don't know. So they're arguing maybe the Jewish people did the same thing. Okay, but that's the answer. Among people from among you, from your own nations themselves, can testify that the Jewish people have been keeping the Torah, the entire Torah. For example, Yavi Nimrod, Yoid Avraham, Shalei Avad Avedas Tachavim. Let Nimrod step forward and testify that Avraham didn't worship Avedas Zara.
Well, not worshiping Avedas Zara doesn't mean keeping Torah.
But it means that was the Nisoyan at that time, and that's the mitzvah that he kept.
But they're great tradition, first of all, and second of all.
That's fine. It shows, we're not necessarily saying that the whole Jewish people collectively, but at least in every generation you had Tzadikim, or in fact, we're going to talk about soon, about Hanani Mishal Vazariah. They didn't worship Nebuchadnezzar's statue. Many other Jews did. In fact, the Gemara in Megillah tells us that was one reason for Haman's decree years later. But after all, you still had Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, who kept things up, who kept their end of things up. We said in Megillah, we had two, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Talmidim, ask him, why do the Jewish people deserve this decree of extermination by Haman? And he says, because they ate from Achashverosh's Suda, Nenu Misudasa Shalai Sarasha, and they tell him, but on the other hand, that's only the people in Shushan, what about the rest of the world? And he says, yeah, but they bowed down to Nebuchadnezzar's Tzelem. And then they say, well, in that case, the fact is they did an Aveda. Why, after all, did they get saved? And the answer is because they only did it lifnim. They only did it out of fear, out of pretense. They didn't really believe in it as a getchka. So therefore, Hashem also, so to speak, play-acted with them and put them in a dangerous situation with Haman, but not really intending to wipe them out.
Are we saying here this concept of the Zara, that in order to commit the Zara, you have to have the intent and the Maisi?
We learned back in Sanhedrin, if you remember, that we learned back in Sanhedrin that if a person worships Avodah Zarah from Ava or from Yira, then we said he's potter. Now, you're not allowed to do it, but he's potter from punishment. And we discussed there what Ava and Yira means. With a mitzvah, that a person actually worships it. A person bows down to an Avodah Zarah, for example, from Ava or from Yira. And we discussed over there Rashi's explanation that Ava or Yira means out of love for a particular person or out of fear for a particular person. We talked about the Rambam's explanation that it means out of love, for example, a person loves the craftsmanship of this getchka, or he fears it, he has a superstitious fear that it can harm him or whatever. So, yeah.
But without that,
it is an Aveda to do that, but when a person is not Chayav Misa, if a person worships like that. Okay, anyway.
That is my second question. Why would Nebuchadnezzar so much say that we, bow down with us?
Because he's in front of Hashem. He knows he's gonna be able to step forward. He's going to have to tell the facts. If Hashem asked him. I'm not clear
about that. You're saying that they were punished because they attended the
they worshipped Nebuchadnezzar's statue. No, right. Primarily the thing is Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is saying over there because they bowed to Nebuchadnezzar's statue.
Right.
Which actually...
Without intent, really.
Tosfos actually discusses over here and in a few other places in Shas the question that statue may not have even been Avodah Zarah. It may not have been an issue of Avodah Zarah so much as a matter of Chilul Hashem. Anyway, that's a side issue, but the point is, that we still have. The point still remains that Hanani Mishael Vazalia didn't, which is what we're getting out of it here. That's the essential point of it.
Even if a woman calls they said that the Jews...
Yeah, they still... Yeah. So Yavai Nimrod V'yoy V'Avraham Shalai Avodah Avodah Zarah. Yeah. That's what Rosh Hashanah is saying. That's why they had to go through this whole thing with the Hamas.
Did anything happen to them because there was a degree of
Avodah Zarah. Okay, there was, yeah. All right, so Yavai Lavan V'yoy V'Yakov Shalai Nechshed Al Gezel. Lavan come and testify about Yaakov that he wasn't suspect about stealing. And in fact, Rashi points out that Yaakov himself says to Lavan, you know, normally a son-in-law has been living by his father-in-law for 20 years, inevitably he's going to have some little household items with him. I didn't take anything that I'm not entitled to.
What was he alluding to?
That's what it means. In other words, that he's saying that usually a son-in-law in his father-in-law's house, inevitably he's going to have some things that belong to his. But me, I only took exactly what I was entitled to. Let Potiphar's wife come and testify about Yosef that he wasn't even suspect of doing an aveda with her. Yavin Nebuchadnezzar, Yoyd Bechanani Mishal Vazari Shalei Shtakvel Tselem. Let Nebuchadnezzar come forward and testify that Hanani Mishal Vazari didn't bow down to a statue. And again,
Avram wasn't even a Yid then. But what's the Raya?
Okay, but still, nevertheless, Avodah Zarah is one of the Shevah Mitzvot Nenayah. So at that time, Avraham, being a proto-Yid, you could say, was still careful about that. But yeah, I mean, for that matter, Yaakov also, Gezel is also one of the Shevah Mitzvot Nenayah. Eshes Ish is also, Rashi makes a specific point in mentioning over here that Eshes Ish is also to Bnei Noach, even if we consider Yosef at that time to be a Ben Noach, then still he's also to have to do with Potiphar's wife. Yeah. Hanani, Mishal, Vazari already are full-fledged Jews. That's what leads Tosfos to that's part of this and a number of other things. Tosfos mentions over here again the idea that Nebuchadnezzar's statue may not have been Avodah Zarah as such. It may just have been in honor of the king, but still it was a Chilul Hashem to bow down to it publicly and make it look like you're repudiating Hashem. Okay. Yavesh, Yavesh, V'yoyed B'Daniel, Shalei B'Tol Tatfila. Let Yavesh, the king of Persia, step forward and let him be able to testify about Daniel that he never stopped davening. There's a story over there in Sefer Daniel where Yavesh was convinced to make a law that for the next 30 days nobody's allowed to bow, nobody's allowed to worship any other power other than Yavesh. And during that time, to request anything from any other power or whatever other than Yavesh, and Daniel keeps on davening over there and gets thrown into the lion's den. Yavesh builded a shuchi with Sefer Naamasi and Alifah Zatimani. Let builded a shuchi and Sefer Naamasi and Alifah Zatimani be friends of Eov. The Eliyahu ben Bracha Labuzi is the fourth person who appears in the story of Eov. He's in parenthesis over here because actually Rashi over here and Tosfos in Bava Basra point out he doesn't belong in this list because he in fact was a Yid. You have the story of Eov over there. So Eov has all his troubles and everything. His three friends come over here to comfort him and they get into a whole series of discussions with him, which is the bulk of Sefer Eov. Then in the middle over there, after they all give up trying to convince Eov, neither side has been able to get anywhere in the argument. Then Elihu steps forward and then spends four or five chapters over there talking to Eov and explaining to Eov what's going on over here. And the Gemara explains in Bava Basra that Elihu was actually a Yid. So therefore, that's why he's in parenthesis over here, because he apparently doesn't belong in the list over here. We're listing the leaders of the guys. Not Eliyahu, Elihu. Elihu. It may not be. So the Gemara says over there that he was in fact a Yid. Let these people be able to testify about the Jewish people. Shekimu was called Torah Kula, that they kept the whole Torah. These Bildad and Sofer and Eliphaz were all Nevi'im. They were all Goyish and Nevi'im, the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra. So therefore, they know, because they know, not just for their own generation, but for all time, that the Jewish people kept the Torah. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, the end of the Pasuk that we've been quoting all this time, Yitnu Edeim V'Yitzdaku, let them give forth their witnesses and let them be vindicated. So that's they, the Goyim themselves, are going to have to send forth their witnesses, and the Jewish people are going to be vindicated that they did the right thing. Okay. Amr Lefanav, so now at this point, the Goyim say to Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, okay, we messed up until now. Give us another chance. No lo merosh v'na'aseinu. So fine, give us the Torah now from scratch, and now we'll keep it. So Hashem says to them, you fools. We know, Torach be'erev Shabbos, Yerichel be'Shabbos. A person worked on Erev Shabbos. They have what to eat on Shabbos. Mishal Torach be'erev Shabbos. But if you didn't work on Erev Shabbos, meaning in Olam Hazeh, Mehechon Yerichel be'Shabbos. Where are you going to eat from on Shabbos? We're in Olam Hazeh already. It's not the time for doing mitzvahs anymore. Ella, but Hashem says, Achal Pikein, nevertheless, after all, I'll give you a chance. Mitzvah Kala Yeshli, I have a very easy mitzvah, the Sukkah Shema, and the name of this mitzvah is Sukkah, L'chuv Asuaisa. Go do that mitzvah. Let's see how you fare. I don't know if we got it. Could be. Possible. Anyway, so the question is, what do you mean? How are you able to say that? What do you mean? I have a mitzvah, go ahead and fulfill it. The fact is, it is too late. Rabbi Shurban Levi says, my dichtiv, what does it mean? The Pasuk says, Asher Anochi Mitzavcha Hayoyim. The Pasuk says that I come at the end of Parshas Vaschanan, that I command you today, and it finishes off La'asoisam to do them, implying Hayoim La'asoisam, V'lo L'mocha La'asoisam. Only today in this world is the time to do mitzvahs. V'lo L'mocha La'asoisam. Tomorrow, meaning in Olam Haba, is not the time to do mitzvahs. And on the other hand, Hayoim La'asoisam. Today in Olam Haba is the time to do mitzvahs. V'lo Hayoim L'toschar. But today is not the time to get reward for it. The reward is in Olam Haba. So therefore, it should be, by rights, it should be too late. What do you mean? I have an easy mitzvah. Go fulfill it. Ella, no, the reason why Hashem is willing to do that, the famous expression, She'ena Kadosh Baruch Hu b'bitrunya im b'riyosav. Hashem does not come with unfair demands against his creatures. Trunya, by the way, is related to the word in English, tyranny. Like I have the power and tough luck, kind of. Hashem doesn't do that. Yes, I could say tough luck because I yom la'asos, etc. However, I will demonstrate that I'm willing to give you another chance. So why are we calling sukkah in particular? Why are we calling it an easy mitzvah? Mishum d'alas mechisor and kith, because there's no financial loss involved with it. You make a sukkah, and then, as a matter of fact, in Chassidus, it talks about the idea that specifically, the Rebbe talked about it once in a sikha, sukkah is what you're doing. You're not saying do something different than your usual routine or whatever. Do exactly the same routine as you usually do. Your regular eating, your regular sleeping, your regular relaxing, whatever. But do it in the sukkah. So therefore, in that sense, there's no chisor and kish. There's no loss in it. There's no financial expense. Well, miyad, right away, kol echad ve'echad noto v'cholich. So every one of them, and by the way, this is what the Gemara is talking about, that Hashem gives them the mitzvah of sukkah, specifically, we find in the Novi Zechariah, in the last chapter of Zechariah, which we read as Haftarah for the first day sukkahs, we actually mention over there that after the war of Gog and Magog, after all that's over and done with, then it says the remaining goyim of that time, it may not be, okay? We talked about that before. After the war of Gog and Magog, the remaining nations over there are going to be required to come to Yerushalayim every year to celebrate the Yom Tov of Sukkot. And if not, there are going to be consequences. So that's related to our Gemara over here, that Hashem is saying, fine, let's see what you're made of. Let's see what happens. Miyad kol echad v'echad noto v'cholich v'oisa sukkah v'rosh gagoy. So right away, every one of them takes and goes and makes a sukkah on top of his roof. Now, what Hashem does is he makes the sun intensely hot on them. Makdi Rashi explains this from a word that means like cutting a hole through, so like tremendously hot. The chama.
He didn't do this with that.
Hold on. We'll see on a day. In Tkufas Tamuz, in the summer season. And now every one of them goes and kicks their sukkah and leaves. Shenema, the Pasuk says in Tillim, Ninatko es Moisre Semo, this is a capital Tillim, capital Beis, which is talking about La'asid Lava. It starts off, Rashi says, it starts about talking that the Goyim are talking Al Hashem Ba'al Mashiach, against Hashem and against Mashiach. And they say, Ninatko es Moisre Semo, let us tear off their ropes, V'nashlichem emenu Abe Semo, and we'll throw off their chains.
Meaning
ours, yeah. So and Marsha points out, why is that specifically associated with sukkah? Because how do you build a sukkah? You take boards and whatever, and you tie them together. That's Moisre Semoy. And what do you use for the schach? You use branches. Avos Semoy can also mean thick branches, like anach eitz avos, hadas branches. So therefore, they're saying that we're going to break that apart, and we're going to kick it over. Okay, so the question is, what do you mean?
Means they're going to break our sukkahs?
No, their sukkahs. Yeah. So before we go further in the Gemara, there's a lot of, as you can imagine, with a piece of Agadza like this, there's a lot of interesting explanations from different
Mepharshim.
Almost from the beginning, yeah. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of interesting explanations that different Mepharshim, that different Rishonim and Achronim and everybody talk about it. Among others is the idea, so in Chassidus, in a couple of places, it talks about the Maimer from the Rebbe Maharash, for example, that talks about the idea, basically, when a goy does a mitzvah in general, they do it for the sake of reward. The Alter Rebbe talks about at the end of Perek Aleph of Tanya that usually a goy does a mitzvah in an elis yar. They do it in order to pride themselves on it. So therefore, when they see there's no reward in it, then they just kick it over and go. As opposed to, we'll see on Amud Beis, we Jewish people don't do that. We do mitzvahs lishma. There's a kind of funny thing that the Megala Mukas says. So why are we saying they're building their sukkahs on their roofs? So Pashtus, you could say, because in those times that was the common thing. Rashi mentions in Masechta Sukkah that it often, you can. I mean, and in those times, their roofs were flat. They used to do a lot of stuff on their roofs. And Rashi mentions in a few places in Sukkah that it was very common to build their sukkahs on the roofs. However, why is the Gemara making a point of it over here? So there is an idea, there's a Chassidish Avot on it that says, because they're building it on the roof, as which is a high up place, to show that they're priding themselves, look how nicely I'm doing the mitzvah. But there's also the Megala Mukas that's kind of a funny thing on it. There is a halacha that technically, if you're building a sukkah on a roof, there's a concept called good, the concept in halacha, we have good asik, that you can take the outside walls of the house and consider as though they extend up. Therefore, if you have, let's say, this is the roof line over, this is the end of the wall over here, you could put one pole here, one here, one here, one here, on the four corners of the roof, put schach on top, and you have a kosher circle, so it'll be considered as if the walls extend up.
Anything else.
Right. So what? And they do that because they're cheap. So what happens? Hashem makes the sun. Makdir means like this. If they had built a proper sukkah, then they'd be okay. The sun wouldn't. But like this, because they'd have some shade. But because they built their sukkah so cheap like that, therefore the sun taka has an effect on them, and therefore they, and then it being Yom Tov, they can't build a proper sukkah, so therefore they throw it away.
We Jews would go inside.
The Gemara is going to say that too. Good. Wait.
What?
The Gemara is going to say soon that we Jews would also leave the sukkah under such conditions, but not kicking it over. Yeah. Wait. Okay. One more thing I want to mention, by the way, before we continue with the Gemara, there's a fascinating idea that Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch talks about connecting this Gemara over here with the whole thing of Milchamas Gog and Magog. He says like this, Gog and Magog come from the word Gag, which means a roof. Gog, therefore, means the roof. Magog means like the nation that has a roof. Like a mem means the thing with which something is done, like a machal is a food, or whatever. It turns a verb into a noun, kind of, yeah. So what happens?
So what?
The roof philosophy of life is that I'm a self-made man. I have a roof to protect me from the elements. I don't need Hashem. I have my own resources. That's what protects me. The sukkah perspective is that it's not what we ourselves accomplish. It's that we're under the protection of Hashem. So what happens after the war of Gog and Magog is the ultimate, the final attempt of the Goyim to impose the Gog, the roof philosophy on the world. That there's no Eibishter, there's no nothing. It's we human beings have accomplished everything ourselves. When they get defeated, then Hashem says, okay, it's time to give up the Gog and the Magog, the roof philosophy, and take on the sukkah way of looking at things, to realize that Hashem runs the world and you're under his protection.
Gog is the Goyim, but the Magog is...
Magog is the nation that Gog rules over. But that's why he's named Gog, and that's why the nation he rules over, who's the head of this coalition, is called Magog, because they represent this roof mentality when Hashem says, no, you got to give that up and take on the sukkah mentality. Okay. This is Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch. Okay. So the question is, the Gemara says, what do you mean, Machdu? What do you mean Hashem makes the sun intensely hot? You just said Hashem doesn't treat people unfairly. Isn't it unfair you're giving them a mitzvah of sukkah and then you're making it too hot to bear? The answer is, Mishum B'Yisrael Nami, because it's with the Jewish people also. Zimna D'mashchol Hotchukopas Tamuz Atchaga. Sometimes it happens that Kufas Tammuz, the summer season, extends all the way till Sukkot. Because sometimes you have, if it's the year before leap year or whatever, then yeah, you can have the equinox. The equinox can be quite late, and therefore it may not be until Sukkot is even over. V'havalahut Tzaira, and then Jewish people have Tzaira also, and they have trouble sitting in the Sukkot. However, the question is, V'amar Rav Mitzayir Potter in a Sukkot. Didn't Rava say the din is that if a person is feeling uncomfortable in the Sukkot, they're Potter? The answer is Nehid Potter. Granted, okay, fine, Jewish people are Potter in that case. But Uti Mimavati, but do they kick the sukkah and go out? No, and in fact, the Ma'aril makes the point that if you end up having to leave your sukkah because of rain or because of any other problem or whatever, you're allowed to. No, the halacha and the Ma'aril doesn't have to tell us. It's the halacha in the Gemara and in Shulchan Aruch that you're allowed to. But the point is, don't go kicking the sukkah like, good, yay, I'm free of the sukkah. Go out like in a feeling upset. Ugh, I don't have the opportunity to do the mitzvah. Because he says, you see from this Gemara that's very critical. The fact that Hashem judges the goyim one way and us a different way is based on that concept of how we treat the sukkah when we have to go out versus how they treat it. There is, by the way, the Rogachover has an interesting take on this. He says that the concept that you're allowed to leave the sukkah in the middle of the meal or whatever, he says applies only if it's raining. He learns that if you're mitzayir for some other reason, such as the heat, you're potter to begin with from going into the sukkah. But once you're in there, you would be obligated to stay. That's how he learns. So then we see that from our Gemara over here. From our Gemara over here that Jewish people might be potter from going in the sukkah in the first place, but they don't. That when we say kick it, we don't even necessarily mean kick it. They won't even leave the sukkah when it gets too hot, because once they're in it, they know, according to the Rogachover, that they're obligated to remain there, and therefore they continue during the mitzvah of the simcha. Whereas the goyim, being already in their sukkahs, and all of a sudden it gets intensely hot, they leave, which shows that they don't think much of the mitzvah.
But he's also distinguishing between rain.
Yeah, so he learns that rain you would be allowed to leave in the middle of the meal, but other things you would be potter if to begin with. Because rain is something because rain would ruin your food more than anything else.
Well,
yeah.
You could say the same thing about the sun if it's too hot, but at least the sun is something that you can expect. Rain, you never know when it's going to
happen. Well, maybe there's that. Okay, I don't know.
Sitting down,
all right. Anyway,
that's the point.
Fine. All right, let's continue. At that point, Hashem sits and laughs about them. Shenema, as the next pasuk continues, they until him, Yoshev Hashemayim Yischak v'gomer, the one who sits in heaven, Hashem, laughs at them. This is that they claim that they can do the mitzvahs, and it turns out that not. Now the truth is revealed. A lot of times, when do you laugh at something when the truth is finally revealed, like an unexpected truth? So like now, all of a sudden, unexpectedly, it's shown that the difference between a yid and a goy. So that brings about laughter. Then they would be judged differently. Okay. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, and Rabbi Yitzchak says in this connection, Ein choik lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu ela oisayim bovad. We never find that there's laughter by Hashem except for that day. We find in different places in Tanakh Hashem is described as happy, but not laughing like. And in fact, Tosfos points out, we also have the famous story of Tanur Shalach Noi over there, the famous story with the argument between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim, with Loi v'Shamayim, where the Gemara says over there that Hashem, that Eliyahu HaNavi says, Hashem smiled and said, Nitzchuni Banai, my children have defeated me, have overcome me. But that's just like a smile. But the actual laughter is only over here. Yoshev HaShamayim Yitzchak. Only Osayim. Only at that time. That's when it's going to end. Okay. Then there are some Amoraim who learn that this statement of Rabbi Yitzchak about there's no schoik before Hashem, only that day, he learns it aha. He learns it in connection with the following statement. Not the story before about the judgment of the nations, but another one. The Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer. La'asid lover, boin over to Kachavim Muskairin. La'asid lover, when Mashiach comes, there are going to be goyim who come to be converted, to become gerim. And the Gemara interjects before we even continue with what Rabbi Yossi is saying. And if they come to become Gerim, are we going to accept them? But we learn in a Braisa, we do not accept Gerim in the time of Mashiach because they may not be doing it L'shem Shemayim. They may just be doing it in order to join in the prestige and whatever of the Jewish people to benefit. Yeah. And similarly, they did not accept Gerim in the time of David or in the time of Shlomo. So what do you mean that they're going to be accepted, there are going to be Gerim, Limos Mashiach? No, so continuing the Braisa, Elashanasu Gerim Grurim. No, what's going to happen is there's going to be people who are going to become Gerim on their own. Meaning like they're going to start taking on
Mitzvah.
Grurim means like they're dragged along, like they drag themselves in, they schlep themselves in. So either it means like they start voluntarily taking on mitzvahs, or it can mean also that Amram talks about in Hilchos Yisurei Bia, that even in the time of David and Shlomo, even though you weren't allowed to accept Gerim, you still had Batei Dinim Shel Hadyotis, you still had Batei Dinim that didn't know the halacha to this level, and they did accept such people as Gerim, and therefore the Chachamim of that time said, okay, we got to wait and see. How are things going to develop? Are they going to show themselves to be loyal Jews or not? So over here, Gerim Grurim can also be that there's going to be Limos HaMashiach, there's going to be these Batei Dinim Shel Hadyotis that'll accept them as Gerim. Anyway.
But then it's going to be obvious that...
Umanichin Tefillin Berashayin, Tefillin Berashayim, so these so-called Gerim or improper Gerim or whatever are going to be putting Tefillin on their heads, Tefillin on their arms. By the way, the fact that the head one comes first shows it's more they think about, they like the ideas of Torah. They're not so into the Maisa. They're not so much into Nasa versus Nishma as a Yid should be. Okay. Anyway.
You start with Oro.
But it's not the right way to do it. We know it's supposed to be you shout him loisa yadecha b'hoilu d'tafas b'ninecha because a ma'aseh hu it. Your deed is the main thing. But the goyim look at it as first we got to understand with our brains. Okay. Anyway. Tzitzis b'vigdeim, they put tzitzis on their clothes, mezuzah b'vizcheim, they put mezuzahs on their doors. Well, kivin shadoyin milchemes goyg and magog, then when they see the war of goyg and magog approaching, oim lahen, so these goyim ask goyg, Almabosem, what are you coming? Why are you invading for? Oymimloy, and they answer with the words of the prophet. What's your object? What's your objective in this war? Oymimloy,
right.
And he answers them. Oymimloy, they say to him. Oymimloy, whatever the armies of Gog and Magog say to them. Al Hashem ba'al Mashiach. We're fighting against Hashem and we're fighting against Mashiach. Yeah. Why are the nations assembling and the peoples are speaking emptiness? They have no chance against Hashem. And that's the pasuk continues. That the end of the next pasuk continues that they're gathering together al Hashem va al Mashiach. They're trying to fight against Hashem and against Mashiach.
They have no chance against him. Why are they going?
Well, that's the question. That the David is asking to them. Why are they even bothering? Shouldn't they realize that they have no chance? But they the famous thing, you know, it says we talked about in Baba Basra, the idea that the nations are compared to waves, because every wave, the same way as every wave figures, I'm going to flood the land, and then it ends up as a nothing on the sand over there, the same way every nation figures, I'll succeed where the previous one failed, and then, yeah. Okay. So now when these so-called Gerim see that Gogog and Magog are coming to fight against Hashem and against Mashiach, and Derech HaTeva, they're going to win. They don't realize that Hashem overpowers all of them. So therefore, every one of them rips off his mitzvah, his tefillin, his tzitzis, and whatever, and runs off. Shenema, as the pasuk continues, Ninatka is Moshe Yosemer. Let's
tear it. About the goyim.
So that, in other words, so we're talking about again, Lama Rogshu Goyim. Why are the Goyim, Goyim and Magog assembling? Yisyatu Malchay Eretz, whatever. Al Hashem Baal Mashiachay. And the result of that is, once these quasi Gerim or whatever, to see that you know what, there's nothing to be gained from being with the Jewish people anymore, then the Naka is Moshe Yosemer. They tear off their cords, their ropes, meaning the tzitzis, and they break off the chains, meaning the tefillin. And then Vakadosh Baruch Hu Yoshevu Masachek, and then Hashem sits and laughs. Like, look at these people who claim that they're going to be Jews, and then they didn't have what it takes. They didn't have the right stuff. Shenema Yoshev Hashemayim Yiskok V'Goyim. As the pasuk says, Hashem sits in Shemayim. The next pasuk continues. Hashem sits in Shemayim and laughs. And Amar Rabbi Yiskok. And on that, Rabbi Yiskok says, Ein Lo Vakadosh Baruch Hu Schoik Ela Oitzah Yom Bovad. Again, that Hashem only has real schoik on that day. That when the truth is finally revealed. Who has that capability and who doesn't? It's my time actually, but an interesting thing actually in connection with the Nanakas Moshe Shema, in connection with Tzitzis and Trillin, there's a famous story with Nachman Breslover in one of his famous stories that he told involving a line of kings over there where some of them had Xeris on the Jewish people and one of them sees in a dream at one point that an ox and a sheep from the mazalos are laughing at him. To make a long story short, the king and his whole family end up getting wiped out, and they ask a chacham, who was actually an honor, a Jewish chacham. Yeah, I've told the story to you. A Jewish chacham who was actually an honor. He was a secret. He was pretending to be a goy in secret. He was a yid, and he explains what this ox and the sheep, the straps and the boxes and the parchments of tefillin that are made from an ox. And the wool of scissors that are made from a sheep. That's what's laughing at you, saying that you thought you could outlaw that, but
In the fire,
you had all the kings who did allow the Jewish people to keep these mitzvahs, right? But then these ones went into that fire and got burned, right? All right.
Night.
Thank you.
They shouldn't go there.